Hello friends, welcome to Camp Kaiju, where we break down a different monster movie each episode. We're talking the good, the bad, and the downright campy. Kaiju are fun, and all strange beasts are welcome here. We're your hosts, Vincent Hannum and Matt LeSpleen Levine. Camp Kaiju is brought to you by BanditsEmporium.com, your favorite shop for unique t-shirt merchandise, and the official t-shirt partner of Camp Kaiju. Long sleeves, short sleeves, red shirts, blue shirts, soft shirts. Oh, you know you love their shirts. Well, now you can use promo code Camp Kaiju at checkout for a 10% discount. Go to BanditsEmporium.com or hit the link in our bio. Hey, whatever your style, BanditsEmporium.com has you covered. As they say, we sell shirts. Hello, and welcome to Camp Kaiju Monster Movie Talk. My name is Vincent.
And I am Matt Levine.
And tonight we are talking about 2016's Colossal. And this was Matt's pick for the week, so I'm going to shut up now and let him take the reins.
Thank you, Vincent. This is a relatively recent pick for Camp Kaiju. In the past, we've done a lot of kind of older stuff, some of the classic monster movies. So it was kind of a nice change of pace, I thought, to pick a more recent movie with a lot of subtext to it, a lot of things to talk about. This was the first time that I saw it in advance of this conversation, and I was mighty impressed, I must say. So the plot of Colossal is very, very strange. We start off with the prologue in Seoul, South Korea. There's a young girl looking for her doll. When she finally finds her doll in the park, she looks up to the skies and she sees this massive kaiju beast sort of lurking behind the skyscrapers. She screams in fear, and all of a sudden we cut to 25 years later. It's a very intentionally jarring jump cut, and one of, I would say, the first of many kind of weird, unexpected sudden cuts that we have in this movie. So the place and time that we cut to is modern day New York City, where Gloria is an out of work party girl who kind of drinks too much. She's very irresponsible. She doesn't communicate with her boyfriend. She spends all of her time kind of shirking responsibility and hanging out with her equally irresponsible friends. So Gloria's boyfriend, Tim, has had enough of it. He's packed her bags and he kicks her out of the apartment. They break up. He's sick of her sort of, you know, aimlessness and kind of ennui, if that's what you can call it. So Gloria doesn't really know what to do with her life. She, you know, she leaves New York City. She goes to somewhere in New England. It's a little bit unclear where it is, to the fictional small town of Mainhead, where she grew up. That's her original hometown. And she moves into the house that her parents left behind. They moved south after they retired. So there's just this vacant house that Gloria now moves into. Before long, actually like immediately after moving back into the house, she reunites with a childhood friend named Oscar, who seems nice enough. He's kind of just driving along in his pickup truck. He offers to give her a ride. And before too long, he even offers her a job at his bar. He inherited his father's bar after his dad died. And it seems that Oscar is just kind of just offering her this job out of the kindness of his heart. Gloria and Oscar went to grade school together. They grew up together. They used to be very good friends, but then Gloria lived in New York City for 15 years. So very quickly, Gloria falls in with Oscar and his very hard-drinking friends, Joel and Garth. You know, she moved back to her hometown to try to pick up her life, to, you know, stop her alcoholism, to try to find some kind of direction in her life. And hanging out with these guys at this bar is not the way to do that. It does not go well. She falls pretty much immediately back into her self-destructive, you know, fairly alcoholic ways. You know, kind of like blacking out at night, waking up in the middle of the day, hungover pretty much every day. At first, she thinks that Oscar, Joel, and Garth, his friends, are kind of like a good community. Before long, it becomes clear that that's not quite the case. So while all this is going on, which seems like kind of like a, you know, privileged 30-something drama that we've seen like a million times before, like, you know, a train wreck sort of person tries to pick up the pieces of their life. That's, you know, there's a lot of that in this movie. But the weird part of it is, at the same time, there's this monster kaiju beast that keeps on reappearing in Seoul, South Korea, as we saw in the prologue of the film. And Gloria keeps on seeing this when she wakes up hungover in the middle of the afternoon. She sees news reports on her laptop and on TV, you know, showing this monster in Seoul kind of like causing all this destruction, killing, like, you know, hundreds, if not thousands of civilians. Really, these terrible scenes that are taking place in South Korea, an entire world away from her. Before too long, Gloria starts to notice that the monster has a lot of the same kind of characteristics and tics that she does. Gloria has this, nervous trait where she scratches her head when she's nervous and she doesn't know what to do. She realizes that the monster does the same exact thing, which is kind of like a darkly funny image of like this huge kaiju just like scratching its head in the middle of Seoul. Gloria starts to realize that she is controlling and manifesting this monster. If she's in a certain playground in her hometown at exactly 8.05 a.m., this kaiju reappears at exactly that time in Seoul, South Korea, and does basically whatever she does, you know, all the way across the world in New England, wherever she is. So, you know, even though she's a little bit uncomfortable about this, she thinks it's sort of fun at first. Like, she even kind of shows it off to her friends. The morning after a drunken night out, she kind of dances around, and like while her friends are looking at a device like an iPad or something, they realize the monster is doing the same exact thing. But, you know, like Gloria realizes that there's like real weight and real consequences to what's going on, to the fact that she can control this beast. She kind of swats at something, and all the way over in South Korea, she destroys a helicopter and kills the pilot. Racked by guilt and shame, she collapses there in the playground. And, causes a lot more destruction in Seoul, because the monster, of course, falls over too and kills who knows how many more people.
Mm-hmm.
So the next day she wakes up hungover, really guilt-ridden, really just full of shame. And Oscar is delighted to tell her that he also has manifested in Seoul, South Korea, as this giant robot. So it's not just this kaiju monster, it's also a giant robot that's appearing next to this beast. We have no idea why this is happening. And really, honestly, throughout the movie, it won't become that much more clear why this is happening. But that could be either a good or a bad thing. So in any case, Gloria and Oscar, if they're in this playground at 8.05 a.m., you know, this kaiju and this robot manifest in Seoul, South Korea. Gloria writes out an apology in Korean on like the beach in Seoul. She gets, some Korean people that live in this town to like translate a message for her. And she writes out a message of apology saying that it was unintentional. She, you know, will leave. She will not do this anymore. And which would be just like a perfect, wonderful end to the story. But of course, that is not going to end that easily. Because it turns out that Oscar, who seemed to be this nice, great guy, is just a misogynistic, controlling, toxic, repugnant human being. It becomes clear that he's become very depressed, very self-loathing by his what he sees as his small town life, his lack of accomplishment in his life. And now suddenly he finds out that he can manifest this giant robot in South Korea, and he thinks that his life finally has purpose. Mm-hmm. He does not handle that in a good way, however. He continues to get drunk with his friends. He continues to kind of like make an ass of himself in Seoul when this, you know, this giant robot appears and either sort of like destroys buildings or just kind of like dances around and makes a fool of itself, basically. So, you know, Gloria is starting to get very tense about this. She realizes that Oscar is not the person that she thought he was. She tries to avoid the playground. She does not want to manifest this kaiju over in South Korea. She even tries to give up drinking. She does not have any more sort of late drunken nights with friends of hers. She does continue to make bad decisions. She spends the night with Joel, one of their mutual friends. They apparently have sex together off screen, and that just makes Oscar's jealousy even worse. He kind of, you know, barely contains his fury, but he sort of clearly is very upset about this.
Mm-hmm.
He starts treating his friends terribly. He drinks even more heavily. The next morning, Oscar apologizes for sort of berating his friends and sort of accusing Gloria of being a drunken mess who's killed thousands of people in South Korea. But even though he apologizes, it doesn't seem very sincere. And it seems like now Gloria really understands what's going on here with this character. So Gloria's ex-boyfriend, Tim, who is the guy from New York City who kicked her out of the apartment, he shows up. He's very condescending towards Gloria, but he basically says that he wants to take her back. He wants to take her back to New York and save her from this small town life of being, you know, a bartender.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Not really all that bad, but he thinks that it is. Before that happens, they go to this bar that Oscar owns, and Oscar is just even worse than he has been. He picks a fight with Tim. He lights this huge, massive firecracker in the bar, nearly burns it down. and just makes it clear that he's continuing to try to control Gloria however he can, mostly by making her feel guilty and horrible about the things that she either intentionally or unintentionally has done. So before too long, a flashback kind of reveals the origin of this story. 25 years ago, when the monster first appeared, Gloria and Oscar were kind of walking past the playground in their hometown. It wasn't a playground at that point. It was a construction site. Mm-hmm. Gloria has this diorama of Seoul, South Korea, which blows into the construction site. The wind kind of picks it up and takes it away. Oscar goes to retrieve it, or you think that he's going to retrieve it, but instead he smashes it. He demolishes it as if he was kind of like this kaiju beast. So already we have this foreshadowing of what's going to happen later on in their lives.
Yeah.
And it's really pretty depressing. We see early on a case of him being a bully, an abuser, you know, sort of like an example of toxic masculinity, even though they're probably like 10 years old at this time of their lives. So it does not bode well for the future. That's really kind of the only explanation we get for like why they're able to like manifest and control these creatures. But, you know, clearly the story is meant to be metaphorical and not literal. So,
yeah. Did you mention the lightning bolt?
There is a lightning bolt. So, you know, Oscar, as a child, destroys her diorama. Gloria gets really furious. And through her rage, she kind of manifests this lightning bolt, which strikes both of them, both Gloria and Oscar, as well as the monster doll that she has and the robot action figure that Oscar has. So through this kind of weird metaphysical event, you know, that apparently is what catalyzed this whole sort of situation that they find themselves in.
Yeah, and it's not really explained more than just magic, you could say.
Right. And that's, you know, I think that's okay. I'm sure we'll get into this a little bit more. But if you're looking for like logic and realism, this is not the movie to find that right. So we're getting towards the end here. In the present day, Gloria realizes that Oscar's anger and his violence come from his feelings of self-loathing and guilt, his feelings of worthlessness. We know that he has kind of like a difficult home life, although we don't really know the specifics of that, to be honest. So he just continues to try to control her. He shows up at her house. He says that she can go back to New York with her ex-boyfriend, Tim, but if she does, he's going to show up in that playground every single day and just control more buildings, kill more people as just his desperate way to try to control her. And of course, she does not feel comfortable sort of just abandoning the situation so easily. So they kind of have this confrontation in the playground. It's really the first time that we see Oscar physically abusing her. He punches her. He hits her several times. He forces her to the ground. And then, you know, again, stomps on the ground and causes more destruction in Seoul. So this is kind of the low point of the movie. Gloria doesn't really know what she's going to do about this. She has an idea. She decides to fly to Seoul, South Korea. So, you know, we have this case where like the next morning, Oscar is going back to the playground. We think that he's going to destroy more buildings, kill more people in South Korea. But all the way over on the other side of the world in Seoul, Gloria shows up to sort of subdue this the robot. So back in, you know, New England, wherever this is taking place in the United States, her kaiju monster beast shows up there. She picks up, you know, this measly little scrawny Oscar character.
Yeah.
She the ability to just like crush him in her hands. You know, there's this moment where we think maybe he's going to ask for forgiveness. He's going to realize the error of his ways. He doesn't, very stupidly. He just continues to sort of like curse at her and be like the pathetic, toxic man that he is.
Yeah.
And she chucks him into the distance. We just see him sort of like flying away. It's a really powerful moment, and it's kind of her triumph. Meanwhile, in South Korea, you know, the kind of giant robot beast, or the giant robot, also kind of just like flies into the distance, seemingly kind of taken care of, never to reappear. So that's kind of like the victorious ending. You know, there's a little bit of a denouement where Gloria goes to a bar in Seoul. She tells the bartender she's going to tell her this amazing story, and the bartender offers her a drink. You know, there's this little bit of a sigh, and we don't, it's kind of up to the viewer. Is Gloria going to go back into her old ways, or, you know, has she kind of like learned to progress as a human being?
Thank you, Matt, for that synopsis. I watched this movie last year. Our friend Adri recommended it actually to Camp Kaiju, and I loved, first of all, it's really exciting to me to get to watch contemporary kaiju movies from the past 10 years or so.
I've discovered that there are a good many of them, but they seem to have flown under the radar a little bit. They're not wide released like the Godzilla movies, but they're really good, and they have a lot to say. And actually, surprisingly, the special effects are pretty good for an independent film.
I totally agree. You know, I think like the visual palette of this movie is a little bit darker than I would like. A lot of it is kind of like grim and dark. Mm-hmm. But I think the good thing about that is there are these like very evocative atmospheric shots of these beasts kind of just like emerging from the darkness or like doing battle on these like city streets at night. Yeah. And I totally agree. They look great. I think the CGI does a good job too at like sort of being in between terrifying but also darkly funny, you know. Yeah. Like you see the monster kind of like dancing around like Gloria does.
Mm-hmm.
It's really well done. It nails kind of a difficult balance, I think.
And maybe because of its maybe smaller budget than a studio film, it really takes time to invest in almost every genre except the quote-unquote kaiju genre. So you have those threads of it's a romantic comedy, it's an offbeat, quirky drama. Like you say, it's just it's that story we all know, the 30-something trying to get their life back together. But there are kaiju creatures that just makes it really stand out. I'm really interested in this director. His name is Nacho Vigalondo. He's Spanish. He's a Spanish filmmaker. And first of all, this film was a co-production between like Spain, Canada, the US, just like, yeah. So it's like a foreign film, but it's not, I don't know. I just appreciate being exposed to filmmakers outside the Hollywood system.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's kind of an interesting backstory there too. During the promotion of the film, in fact, the filmmakers were sued by Toho Studios, the Japanese company that represents Godzilla. They own the rights to Godzilla.
Yeah.
So, you know, before they shot the film, it was kind of pitched as this is the cheapest Godzilla movie ever made. That's what the director, Nacho Vigalondo, that's how he described it. And he even used some of the images of Godzilla in sort of like, you know, pitching this movie and promoting it before they actually made it. So Toho Studios sued the filmmakers, said that they did not have the right to use the Godzilla name and image in promoting the movie. They settled the case, but as part of the lawsuit, they shifted the production from Tokyo, which is where it was supposed to take place, mm-hmm. to Seoul, South Korea. And I just think there's so much to that. I mean, like you talked about the multinational production circumstances, the global nature of the production, which is really fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, we see kind of like the complicated relationship to, you know, kaiju movies and Godzilla in particular. And this even, you know, kind of this theme, which I'm sure we'll talk about more of like, you know, America versus, you know, Japan or South Korea, like a world away, and kind of like some of the implicit themes of, you know, from an American audience's perspective, kind of like Anglocentrism, like maybe we're more focused on what's going on in the United States than mm-hmm. South Korea, Japan. So I just think it's a fascinating kind of context to the production of this movie.
Crazy that Toho would come down on something like that.
It's fascinating too, because the writer-director has talked about how much he loved kaiju movies. He loves Godzilla, and mm-hmm. you know, he finds, you know, a lot of the kaiju monsters very human. They have a lot of personality, a lot of complexity, motivation that's a little bit unclear at times. Yeah. So I think that Colossal does a really good job of like paying homage to that, while mm-hmm. at the same time not really being a kaiju movie, you know?
Right. It really blends the best of both worlds. And literally the kaiju is the human in this instance, right? So you couldn't be more on the nose there, but it works in a really, it manages to put a new spin on the genre that is always so refreshing to see. I guess is it okay if I jump into some of the cast?
Absolutely, please do.
Sweet. So A-list cast here, we have Anne Hathaway. She's the lead, she's playing Gloria. And she was actually looking to broaden her range and sign. So she was looking to broaden her range in the mid-teens. She was a little, as she put it, in no man's land between projects, maybe in a rut. And she signed on to this project before there was any financial backing, which I'm like, hey, good for you, Anne Hathaway. She saw the script. She read the script. She's like, I want to do this script, which is an off-the-wall story. it's not going to be a blockbuster, but she wanted to do it. And as an actor myself, I always appreciate actors who are willing to take creative risks. Meanwhile, you have Jason Sudeikis, the Ted Lasso, playing Oscar, the clever, nice guy who turns into a real, literal human monster by the end of the film. And this is something I really enjoy about the film, is that it turns his typecast completely on his head.
Yeah.
And he is so compelling in this movie.
He's a convincing dirtbag. Like, we see him, we know him as this nice guy from Ted Lasso and other things, but in this movie, he is detestable and you believe it the entire way.
Yeah, like, not even in a funny way. Not even in like, oh, well, he just does that because he likes you.
In fact, I think it kind of reveals like the underlying like cruelty of that, like, oh, he's just doing that because he likes you. Like, really, he's a good guy, but he's kind of just like being a creep because that's like he's trying to like flirt with you or whatever. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like this movie's trying to say, like, that's not being a nice guy. Like, that is violent. That's lecherous. That's like, you know, one of the themes of the movie, which I'm sure we'll talk about, is how it kind of plays with that like nice guy persona, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Hold that thought. Yeah. And then we have Dan Stevens as Tim, Gloria's ex, another depiction of male arrogance, but in an even more subtle way, right? He's trying to like look after her. He knows what's best for her and he really doesn't. And it was also written by the director, Nacho Vigalondo. So yeah, he crafts a smart, compelling story for sure. I feel like I've given a lot of praise to this film, so you might know where I'm going at the end with my verdict, but
I'm fully in agreement, I would say.
That's okay. We could foreshadow a little bit.
Should we call out banditsemporium.com?
Oh my gosh, should we? Banditsemporium.com. We sell shirts. Camp Kaiju doesn't sell shirts. Banditsemporium.com sells shirts because they are our official t-shirt partner. We have a lot of cool Camp Kaiju related merchandise through them. So if you want to support them, you will also be supporting the podcast, and proceeds help us out. And we really appreciate that. You can use promo code Camp Kaiju for 10% off your purchase at checkout. Yeah, just give them some love. Their link should be in our bio, but that again is banditsemporium.com. They sell shirts. We talk monster movies. How's that, Matt?
That was perfect. indeed, we do talk monster movies. And I just think Colossal turned out to be kind of like a, in my opinion, like a great pick for right now, because we've had such good conversations in the past. I feel like part of the reason we do Camp Kaiju is because there is so much depth to Kaiju and monster movies and horror movies, even though they seem sometimes like they're kind of just like simple genre entertainment on the surface.
Yep.
And I feel like that's what this movie is getting at. You know, I mentioned briefly earlier that like the Kaiju monsters have personality and complexity. And I feel like that's one of the things that this movie is implicitly getting at. You know, in the last installment, we talked about Godzilla versus Biollante and some of the sort of, the uncertain, the unclear motivations of both those monsters, the kind of like gender depictions of both of those. And I feel like in a very surprising way, that's kind of reflected in Colossal, which I was very, it's just a nice parallel. It's, beneath the depth of these movies, there's a lot going on.
I love that allusion to Biollante there. Yeah, if you're willing to buy into the male female metaphor there, yeah, obviously it's there in spades.
Yeah, totally. So we can kind of dive into that a little bit more and some of the sort of gender themes in Colossal, which I think is maybe the most bold and powerful part of this movie, in my opinion. So, you know, really, I think this is a portrayal of toxic masculinity at its heart. That's what the movie's trying to do. For kind of a long time, we don't really realize that, like Vincent was saying before, it is kind of like a romantic comedy, or at least it seems like it for a while. Mm-hmm. But there are all these little touches beneath the surface that make it seem a lot weirder than that. And we don't really know what's going on, right? And eventually we start to realize that Gloria has been abused by seemingly all the men in her life. You know, her ex-boyfriend, Tim, controls her. He condescends to her. He makes her feel bad for everything she does, basically. Oscar does that even more. He's physically, psychologically abusive. you know, there are a lot of things that this movie portrays in pretty, I think, from what I know and what I've talked to about people, realistic ways. And that includes, you know, gaslighting. Oscar tells Gloria that, you know, she did all these things. She said all these things while she was drunk, and she's not really able to remember them. So she can't really challenge him. Mm-hmm. She has to think about what he's saying there. The movie talks about the abuser posing as a nice guy. You know, Oscar seems like a nice guy at first, but he's revealed to be, you know, kind of picking up on all of Gloria's weaknesses. He controls her by doing that. You know, even Joel, who seems like kind of this shy, nice, quiet, awkward guy, he does absolutely nothing to help Gloria when she's being abused by Oscar over and over again in like increasingly horrible ways. So, yeah, and I think like also it kind of shows how toxic masculinity is destructive for men as well, certainly for women. And that is the primary theme of the movie. But he, as you said, he also victimizes his male friends and, you know, probably destroys their friendships, one would assume. So,
yeah.
And, you know, like even in the production of the film, I was doing some research on it, and Viggo Lando and Jason Sudeikis talked about the harassment of women online, sexual harassment in the gaming community and the alt-right community. Yeah. All these different kind of like strands of toxic masculinity were intentionally part of the Oscar character. That's what they were trying to sort of duplicate in a very disturbing way. So to me, I was surprised how political this movie is. And even though it is fun, it's entertaining, it's very unpredictable. I feel like there's kind of like a level of outrage beneath the surface, you know?
Yeah, outrage is a good word to use. Let me ask though, who's outraged towards whom?
Good question. I mean, for most of the movie, we don't really see a lot of outrage from Gloria. She kind of goes along with it because she's self-destructive too. She finds it hard for a lot of different reasons to escape these relationships. And, you know, there are a lot of reasons for that, which aren't really clearly spelled out for us, but it does seem very believable that she feels that, you know, she has this element of self-loathing too. She thinks that she's an alcoholic. She thinks that she's aimless. You know, she was recently broken up with. So maybe like I got the sense that she felt she deserved these kind of relationships. She deserved this cruelty and this kind of punishment, which obviously she doesn't. But you know, I think then at the end of the movie, when we do have this kind of like triumphant showdown between Gloria's kaiju and Oscar's robot, I feel like that is the moment when she becomes outraged. She knows that she needs to be taken down, you know?
Yeah.
You know, it even happens with her ex-boyfriend, Tim, beforehand when she's on the phone with him. She lands in South Korea. She said that she was going to go back to New York with him and she didn't. So he's pissed off at her and he says that she owes him an explanation. And she says, no, I don't owe you shit. Sorry for the language on Camp Kaiju. This is a PG-13 version, I guess. But she says, I don't owe you anything. Like, you broke up with me. I am my own person. So like, I feel like her burgeoning outrage is also her self-awareness and her like growing strength as a woman and a human being.
Well said. Like, the male outrage is so overt, but by the end, when Gloria finally shows her outrage, oh, it's such a cathartic release. And it gives her that nice arc from beginning to end of finding her voice and finding her empowerment and agency through that outrage. And when she chucks Oscar into the horizon, oh, it's such a good feeling. You go, yes, girl, yes.
Yeah, you have to be like exhilarated by that. Like, the whole movie has been leading up to that moment, and it really hits really, really powerfully.
Yeah. Okay. I just want to say, another contemporary horror monster movie that really plays into feminism and toxic masculinity is The Invisible Man from a couple of years ago. Have you seen that one?
Yes, I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I love the James Whale original, but this recent remake does really interesting things with it.
Yeah. Okay, great. We'll put a pin in that for October. and then my second movie that I want to give reference to, I'll actually hold off to the end. So folks listening, don't go nowhere.
I don't know what you're referring to. I'm in suspense as well.
Oh, yeah. It's a good one. Okay. What else in terms of themes or form, aesthetic?
I guess another big theme that I wanted to ask you about is this depiction of, you know, these American characters who are very privileged. They, you know, to varying degrees, they kind of treat this as like a lark or just like a fun, weird thing that's going on in their lives. Meanwhile, in South Korea, like, thousands of people are dying. There's terror, there's bloodshed. It's just like pandemonium and chaos. And I think that can be viewed in different ways, whether that's like an intentional critique or actually a flaw of the movie. So I wanted to ask you what you thought about that.
Ooh, off the cuff, I think it's intentional. I think that the fact that you have a writer and director who's not American lends itself to that different perspective of, because I always ask myself this too, like, how does the world view the United States? I feel like the United States is very self-loathing, at least in this current climate, and at least the people I interact with. It's easy to get down on our country. But I wonder just generally, how does the world view America? Generally positive, I still think. But that's not to say, obviously, that America has really screwed over a lot of people in the world. And as that is shown in this relationship with South Korea, I'm just thinking about how deep I want to go into a geopolitical dive on the world history. But, you know, America has treated the Western Pacific as sort of its playground since the end of World War II. We have this alliance with Japan. We provide them their military. Also with South Korea, we provide them their defense. But, you know, how much influence should America have? I mean, I'm not from these countries. Do people in these countries wish America would actually leave them to their own devices? Because to bring it back to Colossal, you think about literally Gloria and Oscar are playing in the sandbox.
Yeah.
It is a game to them. How they as Americans, these white bread New Englanders, are affecting these other countries. It's just, they're just toys to them. So I think it's a critique. I think it's a valid critique on American international relations. Thanks for bearing with me, everybody. I'm a lawnmower. Matt just pulled my,
I should have gave you some fair warning. I apologize. I kind of sprung that on you, but it's a fascinating question, I think. And I think you're totally right that there's a lot of ambivalence there. I can only imagine that people in other countries do feel like a lot of mixed feelings, you know, like, especially in, you know, like the Western Pacific, Japan, South Korea, like, it's, I guess as a way to, like, I agree with you, Vincent. I think the symbolism is so pointed that it, like, I read it totally as a critique, an intentional critique. Mm-hmm. You know, for them to be sort of like obliviously like playing in the sandbox, like that symbol is like too on the nose to be unintentional, especially considering how well made this movie is.
Right.
And, you know, I was doing again some research on this movie, and I found a really great review in Elle Magazine by Estelle Tang.
Okay.
And if you don't mind, I kind of want to read some of her review a little bit, because I think it sheds some really fascinating light on this issue.
Please.
So Estelle Tang writes, "It's unfortunate that this startling story about toxic masculinity is marred by an insensitive racial dynamic and a lack of awareness that who Oscar and Gloria's victims are is a problem. But in some ways, that's not a surprise at all. In fact, it seems fitting at this point in time that in a movie that examines the destructive potential of men, white people's devil may care disregard pretty much goes without saying." I love that quote. And I actually think that reads like a compliment to the movie. I feel like, to me, that sort of clarifies how intentional that critique seems to be, and how like the themes of toxic masculinity and these themes of like casual xenophobia, where these American characters don't really care what's going on in South Korea, mm-hmm. are interrelated in some ways, in my opinion.
I mean, if a country's only as good as the people in it, and this movie is about these two people who represent a very conventional demographic of white people. I think I'm right there with you. It's all part and parcel is what I'm saying.
Yeah, for sure. And I think the violence of toxic masculinity and the violence of the military and the violence of governments, there's a lot of overlap there. And we can go into the history of, you know, patriarchy and capitalism. Probably don't have time for all that. But I think just the fact that this movie even kind of like implies those themes is really impressive, and it does all that while being like very unpredictable and surprisingly fun, given those, you know, kind of very heavy dark concepts.
Again, a testament to Nacho Vigalondo. He wrote it, right? So I feel like if any other director had tried to direct this script, I don't know if it would have been pulled off,
right?
But good for him for directing his own stuff in this case. Because I feel like he knew where to pull these levers, because it is a vastly intricate web of themes going on.
I feel like that might be a good segue to go into the good, the bad, and the campy. Does that sound good to you?
I love it.
Cool. Well, first I'll throw it over to you. What did you find good about this movie? I know we've already covered a lot of it, but then
yeah, so I may tread over familiar territory here, but I was really drawn to the script. I love how deliberately what did I write? Why am I trying to make it up here? Story unravels slowly, deliberately, investing you in each character. You get to know them. You get to like them. When the story finally pops off, it's a total roller coaster. Yeah, so that's what I like about the script. It really takes its time to ingratiate the characters onto yourself. And that is a testament to our actors, Anne Hathaway and Jason Sudeikis. I think they're perfect in this film. They have great relationship and chemistry. Oh, I really like the monster designs themselves. I liked how Gloria's kaiju avatar is a feminist in its design. It looks like it's made of bark of some sort of tree material, very yeah. Mother Earth and kind, a lot of soft, round edges in the design, contrasted with Oscar's monster avatar, which is a cold robot, which doesn't even have a face. It just has like a red light in its head. And it's very angular and sharp. And I think that design was intentional and well executed.
Totally agree with all that. I don't really have too much to add in the good category because that's all the stuff I love about it. I'll just echo that the performances are great. The cast really like commits to these roles, despite how crazy the premise is, how over the top it is, you know, mm-hmm. And that is like instrumental to the power of the movie, in my opinion. Yeah. And I guess, you know, I just really admire movies that have a preposterous premise and like embrace it and just like take it and run with it.
Yeah.
And like don't try to sort of like explain it away too much or like, you know, kind of like seem campy about it. It's like it treats it very seriously. And I admire that a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. What didn't you like about it?
You know, I think inevitably it's kind of painted in broad strokes a little bit, including the characters to, you know, a little bit too much. I think they're kind of like archetypes in a way, like that's especially true in the character of Oscar. And I do think that Oscar is a very powerful condemnation of toxic masculinity, but it does feel a little bit unrealistic that he goes from nice, charming guy to just like complete misogynist asshole in the face of like two scenes, basically, you know?
Yeah.
It makes it like it makes the plot for sure like unpredictable, and it like lands with a lot of power when you realize what kind of person he really is, but it does not seem very true to life. I think in a way that's true of Gloria as well. Again, the performances do a lot in like making us sort of like look past that. You know, she's supposed to be this train wreck at the beginning, but really she doesn't do anything all that bad. Like, you know, she stays out too late. She maybe drinks too much, but mm-hmm. like, I don't know. I feel like some of the movies sort of like, look at how much she turned her life around. Like her life actually seemed to have a lot of privilege to start with. She, yeah, you know, sure. lived in like a nice New York City apartment. She used to have a job as like a writer for a website. So I just think some of those things are a little bit overplayed, but I do also understand why the movie has to sort of like convey that as quickly as possible to like weave in the sort of like genre elements, you know?
Yeah. Man, I'm so glad I thought I was the only one. You also found that switch between Jason Sudeikis's character a little jarring. Yeah.
Intentionally, I'm sure. But it, you yes. know, I wish it had been like a little more realistic, maybe
yep.
convincing.
Yep. Yeah. That was my one critique. And it's not even a total critique, because they do pull it off. It works, right? But the shift, the tonal shift is so quick. And if it weren't for the actors and this director, it wouldn't have worked.
Right.
They stick the landing, but they wobble a little bit.
Yeah. Like even while they stick the landing, you're like, oh, I don't know if I totally buy that, but I'm okay with it. We'll move on.
Right. No. Exactly. Because by the end, it all works out.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's worth it to like get to convey the points that the movie's trying to get across. It totally is worth it, I think.
Yeah.
What would you say are the campy elements?
Well, So this is my big reveal at the end, when Gloria's kaiju avatar grabs Jason Sudeikis and throws him into the sky. It reminded me of, and it's not, so this isn't like a specific campy thing, but it reminded me of the 1958 cult classic Attack of the 50-Foot Woman. Have you ever seen it? Have you heard of it?
I have to admit I have not. I'm dying to.
Definitely worth a watch. I watched it last year, right before I watched Colossal. And it is, it's like the, it is another monster movie about a woman coming into her own and realizing she has power over the gaslighting men in her life. She takes her two-timing husband and smashes him. And well, in that movie and in Colossal, they literally smash the patriarchy, and it is the most satisfying thing in the world.
I love that connection. I hope that maybe in the future we'll talk about Attack of the 50-Foot Woman for a Camp Kaiju episode. But
I really would love to. I did an episode, a little plug, on my own last year, one of my 5-minute episodes, but I really would love to revisit it and talk to you about it. It's got a lot going on, just like Colossal.
That's great. What a like intentional and like purposeful homage, you know, to the history of monster movies.
Yeah.
For me, I would actually say, you know, the only parts that I thought were sort of campy was when the Oscar character again gets a little bit too like villainous. Like there's one scene where Gloria returns to her house late at night, and she turns on the light, and suddenly Oscar is sitting there, in her chair, sort of like Bond villain-esque, you know, like,
yeah,
like, chair around or something, figuratively speaking. So again, I think that gets to be a little bit unrealistic, unconvincing, I guess. But aside from that, I actually don't think there's too much camp in this movie, and I feel like the fact that it takes its premise so seriously is one of the best things about it.
Right, my camp was just talking about another movie. So.
Yeah,
but it does have a charm about it, and especially in the first half, that, you know, you do feel like you're watching a dark comedy, at least.
For sure. Yeah.
Well, are you ready to give our verdicts?
I'm ready. Yeah. So for me, well, first off, I'll read all the different categories that we have. I know you always often do that, Vincent, and I love that. So, you know, is it a timeless classic? Does it stand the test of time? Maybe there are some antiquated moments, but overall it's great and stands the test of time. It could be historically significant or fun, but it does not stand the test of time, or it is not worth revisiting, and it definitely does not stand the test of time. So, you know, again, this movie is relatively recent, so maybe too soon to say if it stands the test of time or not, but I would say that it is a timeless classic. Again, that might be sort of ridiculous to say right now, like 5 movies after the year came out, but you know, so far it stands the test of time, and it has so much to it. It's really fun, unpredictable, well made, well acted. This is kind of like the sweet spot of genre filmmaking. It's all the best things about it, I think.
I love that. I think it's all. I think it's, yeah, I think it's a classic. I think it's a modern classic. I think it's still too early to tell if it stands the test of time, but I think it's got potential. I think it'll be one of those movies that'll just age like fine wine. And one day people will look back and say, you know, what's a great monster movie? Colossal from 2016.
I hope so. I think you're right. And I'm not saying the movie's perfect. I don't think that's true. But I think like a lot of the things that are flaws about the movie just make it more interesting. So I'm totally okay.
Cool, man. All right. Well, thank you all for hanging out and joining us at Camp Kaiju. Next week is my pick, and I am going to run with the Colossal theme. So I, two things to this. So I was recommended a film, a 1950s monster movie called The Amazing Colossal Man from 1957. It is a cult classic that I've heard, but it doesn't look like it's well made. And I think this is interesting because I feel like right now we've talked a lot about good movies, like they're well-made movies. We haven't yet talked about like a really shoestring budget type movie. So I want to dive into one of those cult classics from the 50s, Radiation, all that stuff, and see if it that truly does stand the test of time.
I can't wait. That sounds great. Let's get into some shoestring stuff. I'm excited.
Yeah, some real corny stuff. So that's going to be a couple weeks from now. The Amazing Colossal Man. Check it out, everybody. And until next time, stay campy. Thanks for listening, friends. If you like what you hear, please follow, rate, and review this podcast, and follow us on Instagram for more monster movie talk. I'm Vincent Hannum with Matt Levine, music by Terrence Jackson. And until next time, stay campy. Oh, and don't forget to visit banditsemporium.com or hit the link in our bio to shop Camp Kaiju t-shirts. banditsemporium.com is our official t-shirt partner, so show them some love while you're at it. You're in good sleeves. Arms. Either way, just use promo code CAMPKAIJU at checkout for that 10% discount. And whatever your style, banditsemporium.com has you covered. As they say,
we sell shirts.
And then I asked the writer director, the Spanish fellow named Nacho Vigalondo, who's fantastic and very, very funny, very odd, very clever guy. I was like, Nacho, how do you describe the movie? He's like, I tell people it is a movie about a woman who goes back to her home, and every time she drinks, a monster attacks soul. I was like, okay, I'll do that. All right. So I started doing that, and people would still be like, okay. And then I'd be like, and the girl is played by Anne Hathaway. And they're like, oh, okay, all right. You're still a legitimate actor.
That's
okay,
right.
Good, yeah. You're not doing just like, yeah, like monster porn or something. Like, I don't know.
Do you
like...
think she got the same response when she said Sudeikis was in it?
No.
Yeah.
I hope not. God, I hope not. I think maybe she'd have to break out her phone and show people a picture of me, and they'd be like, oh, he's in The Hangover. And it's like, no, different guy. Different guy. So that's
But it
that's
is great.